That's my daughter and grandchildren. That's it.
Supergirl.
You made a special recommendation. I saw it.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the Board of Public Works. Today is November 16th, All Day, and I want to thank you all for being here. We have some exciting things coming up on our hit parade here. We are going to be hearing from the University of Maryland's team that took first place worldwide in the 2011 Solar Decathlon. So this is very cool. We're going to hear from them right off the bat. But first, as soon as we ask our controller and treasurer if they have any opening comments today. Controller, Madam Treasurer.
I want to hear and see the Solar Decathlon.
Yes. Me too. But if I could just note for the record, a good friend of mine, Mike Dresser, is in the room from the Baltimore Sun.
Yes.
I just want to remind everyone, if you didn't see it in the Sunday Sun, there was a tremendous article about the Port of Baltimore.
Yeah, I noticed that article too. Did you notice how it mentioned there was never one mention of the O'Malley Brown administration anywhere? It was remarkable. Michael, how did you do that? The only public-private partnership, the consistency of leadership interrupted only once, and yet the job's happening 10 years ahead of Norfolk, and you managed to keep the name O'Malley Brown out of the entire article. That was phenomenal. I'm sorry.
Neither was the comptroller or the treasurer mentioned, but... I loved it because we were out competing Norfolk, which has been a thorn in my side for years, that somehow that port is able to grow faster than Maryland, and now it's the reverse. And I just wanted to thank the Transportation Secretary and Mr. White and the governor, of course, and everybody else involved. But this is an economic engine for the state, and we're talking about billions of dollars in jobs and payroll and economic activities. So God bless you. It was a great article.
Thank you very much, and everybody here deserves on everything that they can to support the board. Thank you all.
Well, and I think the fact is that it is nationally known as one of the few really outstanding, thus far successful, and appropriate public-private partnerships.
I don't want to get too down in the weeds, but if you want to send the article to Governor McDonald, feel free.
Actually, we have a little competition going on, at least between port administrators and secretaries over that. So.
Excellent. I would...
No, go ahead. I've already interrupted once.
I did just want to note for the record that this is National Education Week in the country, obviously here in Maryland. Obviously, it's very appropriate to honor the teachers and students of our state. Worked very hard and finished number one in many, many surveys and national publications for their accomplishments. But also, in Education Week, today happens to be Education Support Professionals Day. And I thought it was a perfect time to recognize that it takes an entire team to build a really great school system. We have the nation's best teachers, but they could not do their job effectively without the support of our custodians and administrative assistants and school bus drivers and nurses and security staff, all of whom work incredibly hard and receive not as much attention for their contribution. I'm going to be visiting Odenton Elementary tomorrow in Anne Arundel County, and it's a perfect example of what I'm talking about as far as the importance of these janitors, custodians, just blue-collar workers in these schools. Odenton was built in 1930, 80 years ago, more than 80 years ago. It's undergone five major renovations over the years. It's been filled to capacity and expanded. It's remained in the heart of its neighborhood. Despite being over 80 years old, it still achieves a superior maintenance rating from the state school construction program. I wonder if Dr. Lieber's here, but this is not an easy accomplishment. We're talking 37 engineering criteria. So this is quite an accomplishment for an 80-year-old school. It not only helps the state's bottom line, because we defer the need for incredibly expensive new schools, it also helps the students, because studies have shown that kids learning in safe, clean, and healthy facilities perform better academically and have more pride in their school. Think about that for a minute. It's an old school. It's well-maintained. You save money, and they have superior academic performance. Obviously, it doesn't happen without the commitment of teachers and administrators, but it also doesn't happen without the staff who are saving taxpayer dollars and providing children with a quality learning experience. It doesn't happen without the involvement of a whole network of parents, businesses, and other advocates who step up and take care of these wonderful facilities. It's a perfect recipe for a successful school and one that we see duplicated across Maryland. I'm proud to be part of the Board of Public Works, which makes a huge commitment to school construction investment. And I just want to reach out and say, in addition to building new schools, it's taking care of the ones we have that I think is so commendable. So I'd just like to ask everyone to take a moment and thank everyone, I mean everyone, who works in our schools, the best in the nation. And then finally, I was sitting home watching TV on Sunday. Sadly, the Ravens and the Redskins, very disappointing. But then all of a sudden, what comes on CBS but 60 Minutes? And all of a sudden, for 15 minutes, I'm looking at one of my dear friends, Freeman Hrabowski, the president of the University of Maryland, Baltimore County, as he and his school and his program is put in the national spotlight. And he looked terrific. Just reminds me what a great institution that is and what a great educator Freeman Hrabowski is. It's very, very uplifting for me to see that.
It was great.
Thank you, Governor.
Thank you.
Right after he got the Carnegie Award, slightly after Britt got the Carnegie Award,
made Maryland look good, as does the solar, is it Solar Decathlon Group, or what is it that's here?
What do we call your official name?
That's here.
The Solar Decathlon.
Oh, the Watershed.
The Watershed Team.
You do Maryland proud.
But they competed in. So let's do that.
We have Dr. Wallace Lowe here, speaking of college presidents. Maybe he can come up to stand along with the new vice president. Rob Spector can come up, and Dr. Amy Gardner, if he would come up too. And we can.
And Mrs. Miss Winfield, could you do me a favor and get the football helmet from the dais in there? I mean, since, you know, I appreciate the comptroller pointing out that it's National Education Week, but really in Maryland every week is Education Week. And we're so very, very proud of the great work that we're about to hear from the Watershed Team. And we're glad that Dr. Lowe is with us. Doctor?
Thank you. We're very, very proud of our University of Maryland students, staff, and faculty. And we are very, very grateful to the state, to the governor, for your support. So it's not just about pride in uniforms and helmets. It's also pride in our academic achievements. And here is Amy to tell us more about our Watershed Team.
Thanks. Wow, is that for us?
No, this is for me.
Well deserved.
Thank you.
So we would like to thank the governor, the comptroller, the Board of Public Works for receiving us today and hearing from us a little bit. And we want to thank Dr. Lowe, our president, for supporting our efforts in this project. So if I might be so bold as to say, who knows about the Solar Decathlon? Hands. Okay, so we're doing well. Which way do I point this?
Where's the point to? Where does the point to?
Point to.
Okay, there we go.
Okay, so the Solar Decathlon is a the Department of Energy project where 20 university teams come and, over the course of 2 years, design, build, and operate houses that are totally powered by the sun. And the house that wins is the one that best balances energy efficiency, architecture, efficiency, and affordability. The University of Maryland has a long and distinguished history in participating in this project. There have been 5 decathlons in the United States thus far. We participated in 4 of them. In 2002, we came in 4th. In 2005, we came in 8th overall and won People's Choice. In 2007, we came in 2nd overall, placed 1st in over half the contests, and it was up until the very last day that we were in 1st place. And so we come back in 2011, and we did it. So, why do we do this? Why do we do the Solar Decathlon? The Solar Decathlon is an unparalleled opportunity to educate present and future leaders in sustainable design. It's an opportunity to reach across campus boundaries for an integrated, interdisciplinary effort. This kind of effort is the way forward to a more sustainable future. We cannot operate the way we've been operating up till the last, the end of the last century. This is absolutely an unparalleled opportunity to teach people how to do things differently. Over 200 students from 11 units in the university participated in this project, some of whom are here today. So we chose as our inspiration and our guide and our mentor the Chesapeake Bay Watershed. The stewardship of the Chesapeake Bay Watershed helped this team integrate architecture, engineering, and living systems in order to make the house we called Watershed. But it's not enough to design. It's not enough to imagine and invent. We also had to build this thing. And in order to make this project real, it takes a village. It takes a village to build this house. This team worked together not only within the university, but reaching out to our professional and trade mentors to realize the project. And it's not enough to build a house. It's not enough to get the house to the decathlon. We have to educate the public. We have to mount a vigorous and meaningful education campaign that helps people understand how they can change their lives. Over 20,000 people walked through our house. And we know that because we had a counter. Every team gets a counter, and we can say with assurance that 20,000 people walked through our house over the course of 10 days. And so this is our house, this is Watershed, and this is us. Happy to answer any questions or...
Can I ask you, could you talk a little bit about the stormwater management aspects of
the house?
Can I
invite some folks up to talk
Absolutely.
About that?
Mm-hmm. And you all should
hear from our team.
And you should all prepare to come up here before you...
Bring your team up.
We'll make sure we do a picture up here at the end, too.
Where is the house now?
Where is the house now, the treasurer asks.
The treasurer asks, where's the house now? The house is at the University of Maryland on its construction site, and we are making preparations for it to go to a final owner. And when that moment is ready, we will let you know who that final owner is.
But it will be used.
It will be used.
Great. So what team worked on the water aspect?
So that would be me. My name is Scott Jaden. I was the Living Systems team leader. I'm an environmental science technology student. So my purpose was kind of integrating the environment and the design. So stormwater management, we had a green roof to help retain that stormwater. We also had a constructed wetland that filtered all the gray water coming out of the house. So this wetland treats any water coming from the shower, the bathroom sink, the dishwasher, and the washing machine. So that's limiting that quantity of water going.
And what happens with the gray water?
It's treated through a natural filtration process. So it's a contained system of a natural wetland that we're constructing on site.
Okay, so it's not recycled.
Right, we can reuse that water for any irrigation around the site. So we're eliminating any need of potable water for that process.
So it would go where then? It would go to the... It would go into sort of the lawn around the
Well, if once this is in the actual location, we can put in another storage tank. And once that water goes through the system, it can then be stored in there until you need to use it. So we're pretty much trying to capture as much rainwater and also the gray water that falls on the house and that flows through the house. Uh-huh. So we're, and also eliminating any pollutants that are going off into the east.
Right. Does it go into a receiving pond, or is it just simply get sprayed on the grasses and the other stuff?
There? Right. Well, the way we did it, we had a hand pump, and as it came to the end of the system, we put it in a watering can and then take it to the vegetables or the plants around the house that need it. So just direct use of that.
So it doesn't go into a into some sort of a pond? No.
It could.
Uh-huh. When it's on its final site.
Okay, so the water goes into the system, and then we have a certain retention time within that system that's required for the concentrations that are in the water, like soaps and dirt. So as it flows through the system, it becomes cleaner. It was kind of hard because we had to kind of move the house. We couldn't really dig into the ground. So once the water would come to the end, you can either use it like we did, or you can have it naturally flow into the environment through like a stream or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Could you recycle it?
There are some regulations right now that are kind of in the way of taking stored water back inside.
Okay, so this helps you find what arbitrary sort of constraints there are that can be addressed now.
Yes. We're also educating the public on how much water actually falls onto your house and actually how much you can reuse. So.
How much water does fall onto our house?
Well, we had a 300-gallon cistern that collected all the rainwater off of one roof, and that filled up in like an hour and a half. Jeez. During the first day. It rained a lot during that competition. So, so a lot of water. And square feet of the one roof was like 350 square feet. So.
Yeah, so you may know that the average American might use a couple hundred gallons of water a day. In some places in the world, people live on about 3 gallons of water per day. And our goal was to educate people not only on ways in which to deal with rainwater and gray water, but also to help people understand how much water we use. And, you know, on the East Coast, in this area, we might get 40 inches of rain per year and no sweat. But there are other parts of the country and the world, obviously, that don't have this kind of great riches in water. And so our education campaign was about helping people understand not only what do we do with water, but how much water do you use.
Right.
Well, and also what water has to be potable and what doesn't really. I mean, a lot of people just... Yeah.
How about the green roof component? Who worked on the green roof aspect of this? Was that part of the water system, or was that part of...
That was part of the water system and also the design. Can you talk about it a little bit?
Yeah, so green roof was really important to us.
Can you introduce yourself,
please? Sure. I'm Leah Davies. I'm a graduate architecture student. But I was sort of the living systems liaison between the architecture and these components that he's talking about. So we have the two split roof forms, and one had our solar panels on it, and one had a green roof. So there's sort of this juxtaposition between technology and nature, because we wanted to harvest the sun's energy not just for powering the house, but also through plant media. So like he said, the green roof helped slow down the process of the rain coming off the roof and sort of naturally filter it before it entered our cistern. It provided... natural habitat.
And why is that important? Because there are contaminants, the atmospheric, that fall with the rain to begin with anyway.
Yeah, there can be.
And it's also helping to control that flash effect. Okay. So like insidious upon it, like all the water directly going into the system or into the surrounding waterways. So this helps to slow that flow and eliminates any erosion that may happen.
And the sediment, and carrying the sediment as well as the other deposits over time.
And the green roof is pretty much completely self-sustaining. We used sedums, which once they mature don't require any additional irrigation, so they live completely year-round on their own.
Cool.
Do you have any idea, this was September, October, do you have any idea in the summer what the thermal effect of having the green roof might be?
So again, it's using that sun's energy through a chemical process within the plant instead of being absorbed into the actual roof of the house like a traditional house.
Right.
So this is helping to add a thermal mass to the roof.
It is an extra layer of insulation to some extent, but we didn't get a chance to test that. And we used a relatively thin, lightweight, modular green roof. The reason for using modular was sort of, once again, that educational component, that this was a do-it-yourself system that people could implement in their own homes.
So are there places where you could get modules?
Yes, it's very simple. We used a company called LiveRoof, and they're just delivered in 1 by 2 foot trays. They weigh about 17 to 20 pounds.
Well, that's very difficult.
We also, having to take this house apart and move it, the modular green roof allowed us to put it on when we were building it, take it off to transport, put it back on for the competition, and so on. It's a fun process.
And so who worked on the solar aspects of this, which I guess had to be incorporated into the green roof?
We actually separated.
And what is your name?
I'm David Daly. I'm the engineering project manager. And so the green roof was on the south module, and the PV roof or the solar panels were on the north, so they're facing south, collecting the sun. It's kind of a nice mirror image of, you know, nature versus technology, but they're both used together to, you know, harness the sun's energy.
Mm-hmm. Very cool. And what sort of solar panels did you use?
We used Sanyos. They're 220 watts each. Mm-hmm. And we had a N-phase microinverter system underneath. So underneath each panel, there's a microinverter which converts it, the electricity, into a usable form for the grid. This saves a lot on installation times. It's extremely easy, and it saves on material costs as well. So, you know, finding the latest and greatest technologies and applying them to our house was something that we wanted to do. And again, it's modular, easy to install. Homeowner can go and do this, although you should have an electrician to help. Wouldn't recommend it by yourself.
Did the Green Building Council, did those folks come down and take a look at this?
Well, they probably were up
in the Dr. Pike?
I met with them, yeah.
Yeah? Chris Pike? Yes? Remember that name at all?
That name.
Yeah, this would be right up there, Allie. And who? How about the materials that you used in the wall of the house? What were they? Was it recycled bamboo stuff, or what do you use for the wallboard and the like?
The exterior siding that you see is a thermally treated poplar. So instead
fast
of...
Fast growing?
Yeah. Right? Fast growing. And it's thermally treated, so it's essentially cooked instead of using chemicals and toxins like pressure treated, but it bears the same qualities as pressure treated lumber. So it's rot resistant and bug repellent and things
and
like that.
And it's cooked.
It's cooked, yes, and it gives it that very beautiful color. But the wall envelope itself was 13 inches thick, which is very thick, and we used a unique structural framing system that allowed for less thermal bridging in the insulation. So we had an R value of about R44, which is, if anyone doesn't know, R value basically measures the thermal sort of containment of your home. And a typical house has an R value of about R21. So there were days in the competition we were required to have lighting and maintain core temperatures, and at times we could have our heating and cooling system completely turned off, and we maintained that temperature in the house completely by the envelope itself. Hmm. So we're using way less power.
That's great. And was part of the deal here that it had to be all self-sufficient, like off the grid? For maximum points, it had to be totally off the grid. So
we
with Watershed,
one of 7 or 8 teams that finished with a net positive result.
So you actually create more electricity than this house creates more electricity as you smart people from the University of Maryland designed it. This house actually creates more electricity than it uses.
Yes. Absolutely. And that was on a very cloudy, rainy week. We had very little sun.
We had about 2 days of actual good sunlight.
And we still managed to produce more energy.
That's awesome. That's great. And how many of them in the competition did that, you say? Seven.
Seven.
Out of how many?
19.
7 out of 19 produce more energy than they use. Wow. Al, hire them. Secretary Collins runs all of our state buildings.
I'll take you.
So, could you design something for DHMH, perhaps, that does the same thing?
The majority of us are graduating in December.
And how about the appliances and all of that stuff? Was that all kind of state-of-the-art stuff?
A lot of it was, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they were all, you know, with the fixtures, low-flow fixtures for the water. The appliances are all, you know, Energy Star, low energy
We have two really interesting appliances. Like, our induction cooktop didn't release any heat into the space. You know how, like, gas stoves and things will make your kitchen really warm? Well, you could actually touch the entire surface around the stove, and it wouldn't get hot. It concentrated all of the heat into the pot.
That's cool.
And like you said, our shower head, for instance, was low flow.
That's more than just cool, because with an aging population and a lot of other people, it's really important to not have that very, very hot surface just sitting there untended and unnoticed. This concept.
The appliances
is really applicable.
An area that we could really relate to the public that was coming through their house, because those are things that they can very easily implement in their own homes.
And you had the, of course, you would have had the smart grid sort of thing, so people could see how much electricity they were selling back to BGE. Right?
Yep. Exactly. Yeah, Pepco had smart meters installed on all the houses.
Pepco, excuse me.
Yeah. We're in D.C.
Anybody who else has something cool they want to share with us that hasn't come up in the course of the questioning from the state generalists?
Oh, okay. So the liquid desiccant waterfall, there's actually a picture of it. It's the previous one.
Say that again.
It's a liquid desiccant waterfall.
Say that again.
Liquid desiccant.
Desiccant.
Waterfall.
Liquid desiccant waterfall.
So this is something that in 2007, the University of Maryland Solar Decathlon team actually designed and developed. And what it does, it's a giant dehumidifier, but it uses a liquid to dehumidify. And as you know, in Maryland, you know, it's extremely hot and muggy during the summers. So if you actually remove the humidity within the air, it makes it a lot easier for your air conditioning system to cool the air, therefore using less electricity. But again, it's using a liquid, which is a novel way of doing it, and this is patent pending. This is something,
right.
You know, innovation that comes from the University of Maryland, comes from the Solar Decathlon. This year, we took it.
Wallace, they're on script. Good job.
We took it, and we made improvements to it for 2011, greatly improved its efficiency, and now we actually have, you know, a lot more data from the competition. You know, you can get every 15 minutes they took data points, and so we were sitting there watching them. You turn it on, you can see the humidity drop, and so it's a excellent. And that's the packing media. That's a close up shot of it. So.
That's the close up shot. What does it look like? It's on the back here.
It took a very different form in the 2007 house, mm-hmm. So it was really interesting.
So it's just that little thing there. It almost looks like a, I don't know.
Yeah.
It almost looks like a window size,
yep,
type of.
So
standalone thing?
The window is what we wanted to show you. There's a whole lot more in there. It's probably about 8 feet tall by 4 feet wide, and there's two of them in each module. And then there's a separate component outside called the regenerator, which kind of dehumidifies the liquid after it soaks up all the water. So when you do that, it's a closed loop, self-contained system that regenerates.
Mm-hmm.
So you really don't need to replace any liquids. You don't really need to, you know, add something to it. You just let it go. And as long as there's sun, then the system keeps operating.
And here's the cynical old fogey question. How much did it cost?
Which part?
Like the whole building. I mean, I imagine these are new technologies, so they're all a little more, they're probably a lot more expensive is what I'm thinking. To build it, but I could be wrong.
There's one of the new contests for the decathlon is called the affordability.
If you
contest.
Could go near the mic, because there's people watching on this.
This year there was a new contest for the decathlon called the affordability contest, and each team's cost was determined by an independent cost estimating team, and our teams, our project, it's not just the house, it's more than, you know, it's the whole project. Our project was evaluated at $336,000, and it's about 1,000 gross square feet with probably another 1,000 square feet of deck and associated exterior elements.
Mm-hmm. And what's the ROGI? What's the return on green investment?
Gosh, this house, we would need we'll need the further years of testing to understand that.
And
the life cycle.
Yeah,
yeah,
sort of the life cycle thing. In other words, you pay $300. And how large of a home was it?
925 gross square feet.
Which means what, a two-bedroom, one-bedroom?
It's a one-bedroom with office.
One-bedroom with office.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, in the house that I grew up, that would be enough for mom and dad and six kids.
Can you, going back to the university, apply in your departments, apply the learning from this to other situations like state buildings, public, I mean, not just a small house?
Absolutely. In short, yes. And that's what we aim to do.
So, do you have some sort of system in place to do that, to capture the information and leverage it?
Yeah, the way we do the project is it's implemented through coursework, and the coursework can continue and does continue to share the lessons learned. Each team builds on the previous team's effort, so it's institutional in that way.
Yeah, this timeline is
pretty cool.
Very nice.
Yeah,
it's very good. They look so good too.
What's the timeline say?
Well, just the over the years, the different.
Oh, and their ascent? And their ascent to preeminence?
Yes. No, but also the pictures of the different houses starting from this one that you would recognize from my phone.
That's very cool.
Yeah. This one. Well, and then 2012, we're still waiting, right?
Was there another decathlon in 2012?
No.
There's going to be one in 2013. It would be virtually impossible. It would have been virtually impossible for us to participate. The next one after that is 2015. The 2013 submission process has come and gone. They do it during the decathlon, so other universities and other states get a chance to participate.
Oh, I see. Well, you got to let them in every year.
Yeah, let someone else have a chance.
Mm-hmm.
Are there other venues than the decathlon to use to build for and then demonstrate?
Well, there's now a solar decathlon Europe, a solar decathlon China, but other venues besides the Department of Energy competitions, they're generally private. Not many of them are public like this, but our aim is to find those opportunities and continue to do projects like this.
It's like the Intel, a grown-up applicable version of the Intel studies.
Are you talking to any, are there any home builders or people that put together modular homes that are contacted you about how you put together component parts for something like this? I mean, I would think there's a lot of people that would.
Yes.
Yeah. Good. Well, I'm not going to ask you to talk about it. Good. So another spinoff. Well, that's terrific.
The Secretary
of Energy? Yes. Yeah. Yes. He walked through the houses. He got a great tour from our team.
Yeah. By golly, it is him. That's great. Well, let's do this. I want to get the. How many people working on it all together? I mean, how many kids? Excuse me. How many students at the University of Maryland? How many
we
young
began with about 200. The core team, in the end, for the real effort, was about 30 or so. Kids, I mean students. Graduate and undergraduate across many units.
That's great. Did you have something you wanted to say, Peter?
I just wanted to ask your name and title, because kids are obviously very impressive, but I think you've led a very interesting, successful effort, and I want to give it to Secretary Collins and stay in touch with you, because obviously the governor and the treasurer indicated a lot of interest.
My name is Amy Gardner. I was what's called the principal investigator for the project. I'm an architecture faculty member, but I was only one of eight faculty advisors who joined together as a team to steward this effort. Others who are here include Brian Grebe, Mike Binder. I think that might be it of the eight.
And what departments were involved?
I'm architecture. Brian is architecture. Mike Biner is architecture. But that doesn't mean that it was all architecture. There was agriculture and natural resources, engineering, and that might be it.
Can you send me after sort of a break? You must have had a breakdown of the costs and what pieces of this were the most expensive from What was the most expensive component part of this? Was it the solar energy?
Our sanity. Uh-huh. The therapy. I would say the PV system.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Taken as a system. Yeah, it depends on what if you mean. It depends on what we're talking about. If we're talking about equipment, the PV system was the most expensive thing you could just take off. Mm-hmm. As a system, the building envelope might surely adds up to more than that.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, this is great. Albert, the Treasurer Cobb, it makes me wish that we could be around for the next 50 to 70 years when you all figure out how to make humanity a renewing force on this planet. This is really very, very cool. I am so proud of you guys. And we had a meeting of the National Governors Association during the same time that you were constructing Watershed down there on the Mall. And the governor of Colorado came back to one of our meetings. I don't know how he got to slip away, but my staff wouldn't let me slip away. But he came back and he said, University of Maryland won the decathlon. They won the solar decathlon. So Governor Hickenlooper had been down there. I'm very, very proud of you guys. Our proximity to the water and to the bay and what that awareness brings to us and what you've been able to do with the combination of your smarts and circumstance and God's grace to create something like this and show that it can be done is really a phenomenal accomplishment. And we're all very, very proud of you guys. You want to come up here for a picture?
Can I say, you hadn't mentioned exactly, but this is also a very handsome building. I mean, it really looks good.
We won first in architecture.
Yeah, it doesn't. Being a renewing force on the planet can also be beautiful, right? Come on up around here. Follow Miss McDonald so you don't impale yourself on the wires and things. And then, Rick, maybe you want to take a minute. Move our chairs here. Come on up. We can all squeeze in. There's only 30 of us, right? Come on. Good job. Well done. Well done. Way to go, man. Good. Okay, just kind of squeeze together, everybody. If you stand kind of shoulder over shoulder and then squeeze together, it'll feel unnatural, but it'll look good. Everybody squeeze together. Come on, squeeze. Where's Jay Baker? Jay's not here?
Nope.
We usually have a fisheye lens here.
Okay, we got everybody in it, though.
Everybody's in it?
Yep.
This is Zoe.
One, two, three. Okay, just a couple more.
I should be holding up. No, it's okay.
Hold on.
We got the helmet.
Just a couple more.
Everybody's real quiet. It's like being on an elevator. All right.
That's great.
Okay, why don't we do this? Why don't you all go with Rick? Since you're here, you might as well see the governor's office. And Wallace, if you want to go in there and you all get a picture in front of the white oak desk, you're welcome to do that while you're here. Please take all of the green tea and coffee that you like. And Miss Winfield, you want to take the helmet mascot in there? Thanks for being here. Thanks for what you've done. And you guys are welcome to all the free coffee and tea you can drink. How are you doing? You're the builder.
14.
Well, you've done good.
Oh, really?
Well, that was fun. That was inspiring. That gives you hope. Can't wait to see that new building design. DGS is going to be rolling out.
Got it, got it.
Okay, Secretary's agenda. We have one matter that's being deferred.
Yes, thank you, Governor. We are. We have 14 items on the agenda this morning. 3 reports of emergency procurements. The State of Authority is withdrawing item 13 and intends to return to the next meeting December 7th. The treasurer has a hand-carried item, number 14, which is to extend the closing date for financing that was on the agenda last time. And we are ready to answer any questions on the 13 items or three emergency reports.
Mr. Comptroller.
Item 11.
I believe Dr. Lieber is here. This is the Northeast Region allocation of the alcohol beverages supplementary appropriation. The Northeast Region comprised Cecil County and Harford County. We did contact those offices, but we don't have anybody from those offices here. But Dr. Lieber is here, and he can probably answer your questions about the projects they have in front of them.
Good morning. I'm glad to answer any questions if you have any.
Thank you, Dr. Lieber. And you obviously heard my comments about maintenance, which I attribute greatly to your leadership. And today, this $1.25 million in one-time supplemental school construction dollars, I take it $833,000 is going to Harford County and $416,000 to Cecil, which is a two-thirds, one-third split. I'd like to commend Harford and Cecil. I understand they're not here, but maybe they're listening in on our internet production. But I think that's a sensible and collaborative approach that they were able to work out. And the dollars apparently went to a region. And sometimes when that happens, you have a lot of debate as to how the dollars actually get allocated. And I wanted to say publicly that obviously cooler heads prevailed up there, and they came up with what seems to be a understandable split. How exactly is that? Did they memorialize that in an MOU, or how did that work?
They did have an MOU. And I've read that. Apparently, they simply sat together and worked it out based on the two-thirds, one-third split. And that has to do roughly with the size of the jurisdiction, but they didn't use a formula, as far as I know. They simply took a very simple and very straightforward approach to it.
Well, I'd like...
remarkable. Sure. And I just agree with the comptroller.
Refreshing.
People actually sat down and reasoned things out.
And as you know, what happens when budgets are tight, and people grab for whatever dollars they can get. So kudos to those two jurisdictions for that process. I'd also like to compliment both jurisdictions for having reasonable project lists that are compatible, it seems to me, with the intent of the allocations. Harford apparently intends to use its share to upgrade the HVAC systems of two existing schools, one of which was built in 1949. Cecil's going to use its share to take care of some badly deteriorated items in their older school facilities. And I guess these systems are not here, but my review of their projects is that they made the kinds of choices that at least would fall within your parameters, I take it.
We did find all of these projects would have been eligible in our usual funding programs, the CIP, the Aging School Program, or the Qualified Zone Academy Bond Program.
Had the money been available.
Yes. And, in fact, the Harford County projects, these two cooling plant systems, were going to be capital requests, but they had the opportunity to take care of them using this funding, and so they took them off our capital list. That allows them to move other projects up in priority.
And I take it their boards of education were consulted, at least.
Right.
And then I'd like to just take a moment to compliment both systems on their commitment to saving taxpayer dollars through better school maintenance. And I am going to quote from your survey, Dr. Lieber, where you awarded an overall superior rating to the Cecil County Public Schools, which is the entire county. And I quote from your report, "The maintenance, care, and upkeep of schools in Cecil County is exceptional. The survey results are a testament to this school system's commitment to maintaining their investment and providing pleasant, well-kept environments for student learning." And for everyone who knows you, Dr. Lieber, you are known as a tough grader. So this is praise for the master, and the fact that you're willing to put words like that on paper is something Cecil County should really take pride in.
They have a consistent record of very, very high maintenance, and it really starts with the leadership. Going back several superintendents, they simply established that as a goal, and they set up internal processes to reward good maintenance, to actually set up a very healthy competition between schools on the maintenance issue, and people get acknowledged and rewarded internally, aside from our process. And I think all that contributes very significantly to the level of maintenance that you see in older schools, too, as you were mentioning before. They have some of the older schools, and yet they maintain them in a very, very high quality.
Thank you.
They have inculcated a culture.
Yes.
A culture of keeping and protecting, safeguarding, that I know the comptroller's predecessor, who was very, very keen on maintenance, would be very, very pleased with. It seemed as though every year Cecil County was up here.
Very consistent.
For a very good reason.
Yeah. Is that Governor Schaefer or Comptroller Goldstein?
No, I'm thinking of Governor Schaefer, actually.
Good.
I'm sure that his predecessor would have said the same thing. So here
well,
we
thank
are.
You for that. And please, if you have an ability to send my comments back to the jurisdictions, I'm sure they would have been here if they knew I was going to say something nice about it.
I will be reporting to them, sir.
But congratulations.
Okay, are there any other questions on any of the other agenda items?
I would just like to point something out, just because we've had such great representation of what could beneficially happen to the environment with the solar decathlon. The Appendix 3 in the PARS report, it's a highway administration, slope repairs, because of Tropical Storm Lee undermining our infrastructure. On the other hand, whether you believe in global climate change or not, these things are happening, and I think it's a very good example of what potentially can happen if we don't plan well. And even if we do plan well, we've still got the aging infrastructure. But with sea level rise, with increasing volatility in the climate, I think we're going to be seeing a lot more of these sorts of items. Don't you agree?
We are. It's a national issue, and we're actually trying to start some special effort here in Maryland. It's very clear that not the future things that are going to happen, but what's happening right now is having unanticipated impacts on our infrastructure.
What? And this was hurricane, what was it, flooding that
Well, this was, we had the storms, first Irene and then Lee within 3 weeks, and so we had some significant issues, particularly in southern Maryland. First the flooding issue, and then the significant rain. So we had some height failures and slope failures and take place. Because of I think it was 20 inches in a very short amount of time.
I mean, this is just one example, and then you add on to it the impact of the salinity. The saline water, infusing into what was out there.
We're finding drainage issues and pipe issues that we've never experienced before because we've never had these, we've never had these volumes of rain so concentrated.
It may not be as dramatic as the big Hurricane Katrina and that sort of thing, but it's clearly eating away at our infrastructure. Mm-hmm. And
Lee was actually harder on parts of the state than Irene was with regard to that.
Hmm. Well, and it also aggravated the buildup of mold at St. Mary's.
And it's what 99% of scientists say is going to happen.
Much of it is here with the 100-degree temperatures in July and then followed by the significant rain in August, both unprecedented.
Mr. Comptroller?
Yes, if the treasurer's through. Speaking of St. Mary's, item 12, could someone explain what's going on there?
Tom Brothman, maybe you can. This is the sale.
Good morning. I'm Tom Boatsman, Vice President for Business and Finance at St. Mary's College of Maryland. With me is Chip Jackson, our Associate Vice President, who
for Planning and Facilities, and Mr. Joe Slater, who is the CEO of SMECO, the Southern Maryland Electrical Cooperative. And we also have other representatives of SMECO with us today, Ken Capps, Tom Dennison, also our Dan Brannigan from our staff, and also Marta, who helped us work through this, and Sarah Slaff from the Attorney General's Office.
And how did St. Mary's get into the utility business?
I believe we've always been in the utility business.
Apparently, you're exiting that.
And we're exiting the utility business, and we're very, very happy to do so. This has been about a five-year negotiation to work through all the details. We have many, many years of electricity running around the campus, and it's a very aging electrical system. There are no local companies that can respond on a 24/7 basis to fix our primary electrical system. So, for example, after the hurricane, when we lost some power, it took us a while to get it back on. And that contributed again to our issues with water that came into some of our buildings and contributed to some of the problems that we're still facing today. SMECO will be investing over $700,000 in upgrades to our cables and infrastructure as part of this transaction. And the college share of that upgrade will be $51,000. I'd like to thank SMECO for being so responsive to the 5 years of negotiations. They have gone way above and beyond what we would have requested of them in helping us with our electrical needs. We simply can't manage that type of system ourselves. It's growing in complexity, and obviously we're adding more and more devices onto those grids all the time. In the end, it will reduce our exposure and our risk, improve the reliability, and we'll move forward from there.
Well, it certainly makes a lot of sense to get you out of that business and let you focus on higher ed. And Mr. Slater obviously knows the utility business. That's what they're good at. Welcome, Mr. Slater. How is your organization doing? And how are you going to pay for the investment that you need for these systemic upgrades?
Thank you, Mr. Comptroller, and thanks to the Governor and the Treasurer very much for coming before you today. We worked very hard with the college. The college is a very important asset in Southern Maryland, of course, to Maryland in general, and we're pleased to be a business partner with them and support their mission. We will collect these revenues through rates, Mr. Comptroller. We have three objectives with our upgrades. First is safety. There's transformers on campus that are called live front transformers. If you open the front of the transformer, you're exposed to electrical shock. So we're going to replace those to eliminate that hazard. The second is reliability. We're going to be replacing underground cable that is old, that's subject to failure, and make it much more reliable so that the college will not have interruptions of service. And the third, that was a joke. The third is the college does not have metering on all their facilities right now. We're going to completely meter out every building, dormitory, classroom, and there will be smart meters. The facilities folks will be able to go online, look at 15-minute interval data, and start to measure energy conservation very, very graphically. And that will give us some tools to work with in order to reduce their electric consumption. So we're very excited about it. Look forward to it. Hope we get your approval today.
And I just wanted to thank your team, because SMECO was involved in our revenue estimating meeting that the Treasurer and the Budget Secretary and I had recently. And I think Mr. Dennison from your staff participated on your behalf, and that's extraordinarily helpful. And you, I take it, reinvest the profits that you accrue into your system.
That's correct. We're a customer-owned utility. St. Mary's College is one of our owner members. Our margins, we call them, we don't call them profit, we call them margins, become our retained equity, become part of our balance sheet, and periodically we refund those as new margins come in. This year we refunded about $4 million to our owner members, including St. Mary's College, State of Maryland.
Thank you.
Anything else? Okay.
Just one question from St. Mary's. I know the program, the college, are very conservation green-oriented. It's a part of the curriculum. Is there a way that this is being worked into the student consciousness?
Absolutely. We already have programs that the students have really championed by renewable energy credits and also by putting geothermal in. But with the ability to monitor each building and each unit separately,
our programmatic staff, some of the faculty and some of the staff are already working with students to design competitions to see which residence hall, for example, can use the least electricity and take more off the grid.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Okay. Treasurer moves approval of the Secretary's agenda, seconded by the Comptroller. All in favor, signal by saying aye. Aye. All opposed? The ayes have it. We move on to Department of Natural Resources, the real property, open space. Ms. Lisa Ward joining us for the first time, flying solo. Good morning. Ms. Ward, what do you have? Anything interesting? Pull that mic over to you. Don't be shy.
Good morning, Governor, Madam Treasurer, Comptroller. I'm Lisa Ward for Department of Natural Resources. We have 10 items today.
Okay. Anybody have any questions on open space? Okay, hearing none. Comptroller moves approval, seconded by the Treasurer. All in favor, signal by saying aye. Aye. All opposed? The ayes have it. That was a good CREP easement in Wacomico County, too. And that's on the banks of what river there? Do you know?
MIAA.
Yeah.
And 7A.
Unnamed tributaries. Was that a question?
Yeah, I'm just wondering.
It's Nananacoke.
It's what? Nananacoke?
Nananacoke.
Okay, cool.
Unnamed tributaries feeding the Wetakin Creek tributary for the Comanche Coast.
I think we must have the best maps in the state. Kay Larch, is that you? And then what are you going on there? You're on the Nanticoke one?
Is this item 8?
I have item 10.
Tim was Carolina.
Tom McCarthy can answer that question.
McCarthy?
Okay, item 7 and item 8 are CREP easements in Wacomico County. Item 8 is the one that talks about Nanticoke. Yeah. So if we're at CREP easements
moment
in Wacomico, you probably wonder about 7 or 8.
Good morning, members of the board. Tom McCarthy from the Department of Natural Resources. And this is Kate Patton with the Lower Shore Land Trust. Lower Shore Land Trust, like with the Rural Lightspeed Program, administers these CREP easements on the local level for the department. So between the two of us, we can answer any questions that you have.
How are we doing on our CREP easements? Are we getting more people to sign up? My last look at that indicated that we kind of flatlined on the amount of easements we're signing up.
The initial allocation of funding for the permanent easement program, we've worked through almost all of that funding.
Good.
And there was an incredible amount of interest that initial allocation.
There was.
Yes, we had hundreds of landowners interested.
Huh. And those dollars derived federally?
The initial program was funded by federal funds through the USDA. This was the contract rental program.
Mm-hmm.
The funding to create the permanent easements is the state's match for those federal funds. So this is program open space funding that's being used to match the USDA funding that's going into the contracts. And the easements make the terms of those contracts permanent.
And so this will allow us to, in essence, buffer the streams that run through farm properties. And how long will they remain buffered?
They'll be buffered in perpetuity.
Good deal.
It's an excellent deal for the
state. So instead of plowing right up to the water's edge, we'll now have a forested buffer.
That's correct. And, for example, one of the easements is for a farm called the Tracy Farm, and they're going to be buffering over 52,000 linear feet.
That's awesome.
Of streams.
Yeah, that was the one that caught my eye. That's the one on the Nanticoke.
That's correct, sir.
That's a great thing. Good. And you can check out any of these by going on to Maryland.gov. Green print.
Absolutely.
And see where these important environmental designs are happening in terms of land use. Okay. Thank you all. Appreciate it. We now move on to the Department of Budget Management. I'm sorry? Yeah, we already approved the agenda. I wanted to get it approved before we ask questions. It's our new method here. fact, there'll be no questions until it's approved.
That's right.
I'm just kidding. Come on.
Can we do that with the budget?
No. Department of Budget Management.
Governor, Madam President, Mr. Comptroller, good morning. There are 10 items on the Department of Budget Management's agenda for today, and we'll be happy to answer any questions you may have.
I would just like the opportunity at some point, Madam Secretary, on 1S, which is MTA, procurement of consultants to help with capital project prioritization process.
Correct.
Just to learn more.
This is a Department of Transportation agenda item, and this contract allows them to develop a capital improvement plan optimization process so that they can prioritize their
projects. I don't want to bog down things, but
we'd be happy to give you a briefing. It's a fairly new concept, I think, but we thought we really needed to help prioritize given the diminishing resources and yet the aggressive agenda that we want to have with regard to transit. Sort of a better way to maybe prioritize and cost benefit as well as you know, of the projects. So we'd be happy to come. We had a briefing on it and we're interested in it, so we'd be happy to come share it with you.
Thank you. We don't have anything like this for other aspects of the capital program. I'm just curious. Thank you.
And so this would, in essence, this is a way to prioritize the capital investments according to system needs as they intersect with the greatest number of lives that are affected by their transport across that infrastructure?
Well, I think this is a new software, so to speak, that was demonstrated to us that would, I think, allow us to bring in a lot more factors than we currently mm-hmm. have in terms of evaluating, you know, which projects are the ones that we should move forward with.
Is Beth Lauer aware of this one? Do you know? Could you make Beth aware of it?
I'm not sure. I'll ask the MTA folks if they've talked about it at StateStat. I suspect they have, but I'll double check.
Because we've been working on the same sort of thing with regard to our bridge program and having the layers of information to know not only where, what the range of structural integrity of the bridge is, what the range of structural integrity is of all of our bridges, but also the number of people that travel over those bridges, so that we can prioritize the dollars accordingly.
I'll check. It may have actually been your office, Governor, that was the first one to sort of pointed us in this direction
okay.
with regard to some of this
yeah,
technology.
It sounds like a similar thing.
So I think it is.
Okay.
I'd be very interested also, Governor, for the capital projects that we have. Lots of them deferred. We need to figure out, Madam Treasurer, how to move forward with all those items.
I would just be very interested in hearing yeah. how it works and how you know you've captured, how the group knows they've captured the appropriate.
Well, we haven't
input,
used, yeah, we've looked at it from demonstration perspective. Right. Obviously, this will be the first time we've used it, so we can't yeah. say too much in regard to the right. the benefit. But it certainly was a very intriguing concept of being able yeah. to use something with a software to yeah. take some of the personal
the computation.
Personalities out and personal agenda and interest out to really do it much more in a statistical and technical evaluation.
Yeah, if you map where the sometimes on the federal dollars, if you map where they land compared to where the need is, you'll see a much greater correlation between seniority within the congressional district delegation than you will to the number of persons that travel over deficient infrastructure.
Right. So I think, you know, we've had a process we've used for many years, but it's probably time to reevaluate and
well,
it's
to take advantage of new technology.
Absolutely.
It allows you to
absolutely.
Yeah, thank you. Mm-hmm.
And then we'll still go back to counting up votes. Right?
All right. Interesting.
The Treasurer moves approval of the Department of Budget Management agenda item, seconded by the Comptroller. All in favor, signal by saying aye. Aye. All opposed? The ayes have it. And we now move on to the University System of Maryland.
Good morning, Governor, Mr. Comptroller, Madam Treasurer. Jim Sterling for the University System. We have 7 items on today's agenda. I'd be happy to address any questions you have.
Mr. Comptroller?
Yes, item 3G, please. Okay. Governor, I don't know whether this jumped off the page at you, but
much as we love Bowie State University, it's a request to purchase with taxpayers' dollars 32 Steinway pianos at Bowie State University.
Yes, sir. It's part of the outfitting of the new Performing Arts Center that is about to open there. They want to become what's known as an all-Steinway school. These are the kinds of instruments that would attract the best and the brightest to that institution.
Well, I guess I understand the emphasis on performance and the performing arts and fine arts. I salute the university for that, but could you explain to me, with all the challenges that are over there on that campus, why we would pick the most expensive, and we're talking almost $20,000 a piano, why we would choose to buy 32 of these? I guess there is some prestige with being an all-Steinway school, but couldn't we have bought a couple of Steinways and then the rest could have been the Chevrolets rather than the Rolls Royces?
Well, it's it's all a part of an integrated program. I do have Dr. Holmes from Bowie State University here who can talk to the why all Steinway.
Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning.
My name is Marimon Holmes. Please excuse my voice. I'm having some allergy problems this morning. I appreciate the opportunity to speak with you all this morning on behalf of Bowie State University in regards to the All Steinway program at Bowie. The purchase of the Steinway pianos will make Bowie State the only the second historically black institution in the United States to be on the roster of an All Steinway institution. This would align Bowie State with a select group of quality universities and conservatories, such as Yale, the Cleveland Institute of Music, Oberlin Conservatory, and the University of Maryland in College Park, which is also a Steinway institution, in addition to over 125 other institutions worldwide. The association with these institutions, coupled with the Steinway quality and its iconic name, will help us at Bowie State to elevate our profile there. And in conjunction with our new state-of-the-art Fine and Performing Arts Building, which I'm happy to say is due to open in January of 2012, it will the All-Steinway program will definitely benefit and bolster our recruitment efforts in attracting and retaining the brightest and the best music students from the state of Maryland and from other jurisdictions. This would be a win-win situation for the students at Bowie State and in higher education in general. And I've been on faculty at Bowie for 28 years now. And the facilities that we have and equipment that we've used over those past 28 years have been substandard. This would be a tremendous uplift for our institution as well as our students. And I think that, and as a matter of fact, I just to step aside for a moment, I've been a musician and played piano for over 52 years of my life. And I know pianos. Most musicians and people who have studied seriously piano would recommend the Steinway. There's no question of its touch, the tone, the construction of the instruments is the best, and I believe Bowie State University deserves the best that we have to offer here in the state of Maryland. Thank you.
Well, thank you for that, and I appreciate that, and I salute you for your service. I guess my question is, if you took 100 people in a concert hall and blindfolded them, would they know the difference between a Steinway and, say, what's another brand, Kawai or something like that?
If they have an ear for music, I believe that they would know the difference between a Steinway and the Chevrolet, as you say. I think they wouldn't know the difference between it. The tone is unmistakable. The clarity, the overtones of the touch when you play the instrument. There's nothing to compare to it. Nothing.
Let me ask your colleague behind you. Is there these other institutions, I take it, Yale and others that have the All Steinway performance, they, I assume, would buy those with private dollars that they raised from their alumni or something?
Perhaps. I actually don't have that information.
Bowie State's in the midst of a $15 million capital program. Why don't we use that, those dollars for the Steinway purchase? If you insist, I have no reason to. I salute your presence here and your commentary, but I find it pretty amazing that we couldn't buy a couple of Steinways for the professionals when they appear at Bowie and the students when they have a public performance. But the other 30 could be, much less expensive and, frankly, just as good for people like myself. And I'm sure most of the students in their studios. But in any event, why wouldn't we use private dollars to buy the Steinways rather than taxpayers?
I think that's a fair question. I don't know whether Bowie engaged in any kind of private fundraising for this particular purchase, but I'll certainly go back and address that with them.
Is it normal for them to, when they build a new building and they have long life equipment in it, to get it from the private sector? I mean, isn't that a normal part of equipping a building?
Well, these are items that are on the approved equipment list that are developed, so it is a normal part of that process.
Yes. Well, this process is the normal process.
Correct.
Yes.
Okay. I'm just commenting for the record, and I'm reluctantly going to vote against this because I like Bowie State University, but I think buying 32 Steinway pianos in this kind of climate is just... Given the challenges that all these universities face, and you see that, I take it, in your
Absolutely.
In the system, and I just think it's a luxury at this point that the taxpayers should not be paying for, other than one or two that would be used for the concerts that people come in for. But the rest of it, I think, we could very nicely do with much less expensive, almost just as good pianos. And
Mr. Comptroller, may I make a
sure.
comment? The pianos that we would like to purchase would be four actual Steinways, and the other pianos would be Steinway-designed products, such as Boston pianos and Essex pianos, which are designed by Steinway. And I believe that the cost that was given us was equivalent to that if we had purchased, say, Kauai's. I mean, they came, gave us a very fair price, I believe, for these better pianos. But they're not all Steinway as it is at the University of Maryland College Park, which I believe have Steinways in their practice rooms as well. We will not have Steinways in our practice rooms. We will have Essex pianos, which are designed by Steinway. And in my office, I will have a Boston piano, which is designed by Steinway. But in our concert facilities, our main theater and the piano tutorial studios and the recital hall, we will have actual Steinways. So it's not... Yeah. You're not buying all...
No, I appreciate it. Don't take this personally, because you... Obviously, you play beautifully on whatever the piano is that's in front of you, and the kids do too, but it's the symbolism of this more than anything that I just think is out of touch with where we are right now, given the economy.
did want to point out that by going with the all-family package deal, we get a 35.7% discount off a list on the piano, so we're not paying the full freight.
That's good.
You did have a question earlier about why we can't buy other types of pianos. There are some uses there. We bought some electronic pianos from another dealer that the board approved at a previous meeting, a couple of meetings back.
I'd just like to put in a different perspective. It is my understanding that in this new building and in our school, which we want to be one of the finest in the country, you're going to have, with this purchase, four concert Steinway grand pianos for the concert hall's public performance, five Steinway / Boston grand pianos for the professors' studios, and 23 Steinway / Essex studio pianos for the students' practice rooms. And there was a 20% discount on the Steinway grand pianos, 20% on the Boston, I don't want to confuse Boston and Essex, and 38% on the Essex, amounting to 25% savings on the entire package.
Aggregate.
And that still meets, this is my question, however, that still meets the criteria of all Steinway because the Boston and Essex are Steinway designed and designated. So there's no question of false advertising or everyone understands that. And are there studies or is it just a gut feeling that being an all Steinway school in fact does establish a prominence and make it more attractive and renowned?
We have not done a particular study ourselves, but we have talked to students. The students on campus know the difference between Steinways and other. It's a name that's just associated with greatness. And they know the difference, and they are very excited at the prospect of us having this. So hopefully we are able to do this. But I would, as a student, if I knew of a school that had all Steinways, that would mean something to me, that this school is about excellence and about seriousness of study of the art of music. And I would be attracted to an institution such as that.
Let me say, I shared the comptroller's concern. It obviously stands out. But I appreciate your buoys. I don't know actually who responded to the questions of the deputy treasurer. And I certainly understand the thing about symbolism, but we're looking at two different things: symbolic of a great a school,
yes,
and on the other hand, have to address the cost. I do appreciate the fact that you got a 25%. 24% savings from the package, and that in fact is answered my fiscal concern.
Yes.
I now look forward to going to hearing.
So do I.
Thank you. He's the actual musician.
Well, my people I play with are anyway. Okay. This is now University of Maryland. What item was this, Mr. Comptroller?
Item three.
Item three. Let's handle it separately. The governor moves approval of item number three, seconded by the musically appreciative treasurer. All in favor, signal by saying aye. Aye. All opposed? The comptroller votes no. We now handle the and the matter passes. We now move to the balance of the University System Agenda items. Treasurer moves approval, seconded by the Comptroller. All in favor, signal by saying aye. Aye. All opposed? And the ayes have it. We now move on to the Department of Information Technology.
Good morning, Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller. For the record, L.H. Langley, Department of Information Technology. This morning we have five items on the agenda, and I would be happy to answer any questions at this time.
Questions? Controller moves approval. Seconded by the Treasurer. All in favor, signal by saying aye. All opposed? The ayes have it. And now we move on to, thank you, Mr. Secretary, the Department of Transportation.
Good morning, Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller. For the record, Beverly Swames Daly, representing MDOT. We have 9 items today. Items 2 and 9 have been revised, and we're available for questions.
Not an item, but I would like to recognize Angelo Presagian, who's sitting in the back. I understand that Mr. Presagian is completing 37 years of state service today. Works for the Port Administration, so it was appropriate when I mentioned earlier about the port and what the governor said, and just want to thank you. I take it this is your last BPW meeting, and God bless you. 37 years of this place, you've got my respect.
Mr. Presagian, you want to come up and say anything? Come on. Come on. It's your opportunity. They can't hurt you now.
My name is Angelo Andy Persigan. Work for the Port Administration, Maryland Port Administration. Over the years, I've worked for many governors. Each of them have had their agendas. As a state employee and many state employees, we've had to adapt to those agendas. And I can honestly say that I have seen a lot of integrity in Maryland state employment. I've seen a lot of morals in Maryland state employment. And it's been my pleasure to work with many of those people and to call myself a Maryland State employee. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Percy. Well said. Controller moves approval. Seconded by the Treasurer. All in favor, signal by saying aye. Aye. All opposed? The ayes have it. We now move to the Department of General Services. Mr. Percy, and thank you for your service.
Good morning, Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller. The Department of General Services has 27 items on our agenda. Item 2 has been withdrawn. Item 6 to 9 has been revised. I'd be glad to answer any questions you have on any of the remaining items.
I don't think we have any. Controller has one.
No, I understand you're withdrawing item 2 for further review, Secretary Collins. I really would encourage you to take a close look at this because before it was withdrawn, the facts that we were given showed that a decision was made to grant an MBE waiver to one company and reject the request of another company despite the fact that their MBE goals were virtually identical, less than a percentage point, I think. And the one that got the waiver was a Virginia company, and the one that didn't get the waiver was a Maryland company, and it's a well-known, excellent company. And as a result, we would have paid $200,000 more for the Virginia-based company if we had voted on it today. And I really appreciate the fact that you're going to take another look at it because in its current iteration that certainly caught my eye, and I'm not sure what everybody else took a look at it, but hopefully it can come back in a different form.
Mr. Comptroller, as you indicated, there are many, many factors involved in this particular transaction. We withdrew it to take a look at it and to make sure that all of our steps were 100% sound and appropriate.
Okay.
Did you see that also, Madam Treasurer, or not? I don't know.
I saw the comments.
I appreciate another review because,
As you know, these items are usually very complicated, and we will take a review it again before we bring it back.
Thank you. The Comptroller moves approval of the DGS agenda item, seconded by the Treasurer. All in favor, signify by saying aye. Aye. All opposed? The ayes have it, and that concludes our meeting. Thank you all very, very much.